The Orange FM.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who, like fear, is a constant companion, Adam Farmer.
Nice. I like how you pulled that one out. That one's good. That one's going to go down in our short history as being one of my favorites.
So I heard some sad news, Adam, that Doctor Who is in danger. The ratings have gone down, and I think it's going to get canceled.
No. Yeah.
Are people seriously freaking out about this? I don't know.
I don't know. I could see how watching the ratings, the ups and the downs, I could see how you could get scared. I mean, we've seen other really good television shows, really good shows that seemed like they were popular, seemed like they were entertaining. All of a sudden they just hit a low, and lo and behold, they get canceled. So I don't know if it's a real possibility, if it's a real fear that's going on out there, but if it is, I completely understand.
Really? I don't know. I feel like there's certain shows that are kind of just, they're untouchable almost. And I feel like Doctor Who, it's just, I mean, the ratings may have dropped a little bit, but I think it still gets pretty good ratings. And I mean, it's just such a staple, especially over in the UK. I could see maybe like somebody like BBC America dropping it, but I couldn't see it getting canceled like, you know, on BBC One over in the UK.
Yeah, it makes sense. But when you go back over the history of the show, and it has gone on, it's been laid off. It's gone on a hiatus twice now. We are in the new Who era after it went on a break. It kind of undermines the idea that it's untouchable. That being said, I'm kind of with you. It's one of those things where it seems like the fan base has grown enough. And there's enough merchandise now. I mean, I'm staring at a few pieces right now on my desk that it seems like it still has the financial clout to keep it around. But it is interesting considering, hey, we're at the new start of Series 8. And ratings are dropping.
Now, how bad are they dropping? I haven't really seen the numbers. Is it anything drastic or is it just slightly dropping?
It's nothing too drastic. It's slightly dropping. The article that I took a look at brings up a really good point just about how the nature of television in general has changed. And I'm pretty sure the ratings that they're looking at are those that are watching it live, on network, first time showing, those types of ratings, which I know for myself, I'm not one of those who watch it at that point in time. I don't have access to watch it that way. So I have an iTunes subscription, which I don't believe factors into the ratings. So I wonder how many of those like me that have cut those cords kind of play into that. And I wonder if maybe we're just in an era where the ratings in television don't mean what they once used to, and it's time to factor that into it as well.
So we're part of the problem because we're not watching it live. Actually, I do try to watch it live if I get a chance. If I'm not available, typically I'll watch it on demand through my cable provider, or I will watch it on iTunes if it's not available on cable. But typically I try to watch it live if I can. So I'm trying to help those ratings out.
Well, I'm glad that you're in there. You need to keep doing it just so that we don't lose our beloved Doctor Who.
I do not think it's in danger, at least not yet. I could see maybe, you know, in a couple seasons, the ratings just keep declining, I could see them, you know, working out a way to kind of end it for a while. But I don't know. It's just so popular. You know, any convention you go to, it's just packed with fans and people in Doctor Who costumes, and just all the merchandise sales alone you know, probably could keep that show afloat. So I'm not too nervous about it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting just when you step back and you think of what we talked about last week, last episode with the movie theater showings, or maybe that was two episodes ago where we talked about, hey, it's setting records for a Monday night movie premiere, Doctor Who is. And yet here we are four episodes later talking about how the ratings are dropping. And I just pulled up an article that showed kind of where the ratings are, and it does look like they're dipping. So overnight, for the deep breath, it was 6.8 million. The final was 9.17 million watched it. Then the second episode, it was 5.2 million overnight with 7.29 million final. Robot of Sherwood, 5.2 million overnight, 7.28 million for the final. And then Listen, the most recent episode that we're going to be talking about in this episode of Bad Wolf Radio, was 4.8 million overnight. So it did drop by 0.4 million. Give or take. I'm not sure if that's a huge drop off, but it has dropped overall by 2 million viewers since the first airing of the episode. It's going to be interesting just to see what the final plays into, as they will be kind of factoring in all the other mediums that people can watch it in. But yeah, it has dropped off. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season goes. And honestly, I don't know if that's a reflection of the episodes. I think both of us are in agreement that up to this point, episodes are getting stronger, right?
I think that's our opinion. I don't know if our opinion is shared across, you know, all of Who fandom.
Oh, you know it is. We have the pulse on fandom right now.
But I think we both have enjoyed Capaldi a lot, which I think helps out. So, and kind of speaking of that, there was another article out there, and I know you and I have both, you know, really sung his praises and even gone as far as saying he's kind of reached up to being one of our top favorite doctors of all time. But there's other people out there that are talking about it too. And there's actually this article who, you know, he basically is kind of pitching the idea that he already is the best doctor. So what do you think about that, Adam? Do you think in general are fans out there really enjoying his version of the doctor?
Yeah, so movieplot.com, Andy Walser wrote an article on why the 12th Doctor, Who is the best Doctor so far. Reading through, he definitely hones in on some of the things that I've been feeling up to this point, just in comparing Capaldi's Doctor to previous Doctors, so different personality types that he's not as... He takes bits and pieces from each of the doctors, and really he becomes his own doctor, but still there's those aspects that we've loved from the previous ones. So for those who really enjoyed Matt Smith, he still has the lighthearted nature, but then he also has the intensity of David Tennant. I'm slowly, I said last week that he might be casting David Tennant off of the throne as being my favorite doctor. I still kind of feel that even after this episode, there's just moments, different quips that Peter Capaldi will throw out there where I really love what he's doing. I don't know if he can do wrong in my eyes at this point. I've really enjoyed it. I know that you're still probably going back and forth on it, but after this episode, are you feeling any differently?
No, I still really like, I really like the episode, and I really like his portrayal of the Doctor. I was kind of thinking about it. I feel like he's almost like the opposite of Smith, whereas Smith was a young man playing an old Doctor, and Capaldi's like an older man playing a young Doctor. Like, he doesn't play the part like an older man. You know, he plays it, you know, very confident, and he doesn't walk slowly or, you know, kind of some of the older doctors. I know, you know, the first doctor was actually, I think he was the same age or younger than Capaldi is now when he first started. And he was an old man, you know, he could barely get around. It seemed like was breathing hard every time he walked up the stairs, but Capaldi doesn't play it that way. He is an older guy, but he plays it like a young man.
I completely agree. I went back and I watched Robots Are Sherwood since we recorded our last episode. And I rewatched the episode, number one, because I enjoyed it more than what I actually expected myself to enjoy it. Number two, because Amber, my wife, hadn't seen it yet. And she wanted to watch it, which it's like, heck yes, if you want to watch Doctor Who, I will more than happily watch Doctor Who with you. So we watched the episode. And when Robin Hood and the Doctor are chained up in the dungeon and they're going back and forth, I completely see what you're saying there. He is an older doctor, and Robin Hood was making everyone aware of the fact that he's an older doctor. But the way that the doctor was arguing with Robin, he plays it like a younger doctor. He is full of arrogance, egotism. He's ready to fight with whoever is willing to step in the arena with him. And I really appreciate it. I think you're exactly right. We talked about him being the oldest doctor thus far. Hartnell would be second in line. Hartnell played an old doctor that we all thought that he was going to die of a heart attack while watching the classic episodes. And now I'm wondering if Capaldi is capable of running a marathon. He has that energy of a younger doctor.
Yeah. I love him so far. Love him. So some rumors out there. This actually just came up right before we started recording. I don't know how long this rumor's been out there, but we just found it. And the rumor is that actor Nick Frost may be playing a part in the Christmas special.
Yeah,
Are you a fan of this possible casting? It's definitely not confirmed yet. Definitely in the rumor stage. But if this did happen, do you like Nick Frost? Do you want to see him in Doctor Who?
It would be fun to see him in this role. And honestly, I'm a fan of any time Doctor Who can pull in a name, a bigger name, a headline name, especially for something as special as the Christmas special, an episode as big as the Christmas special. It would be interesting to see how they portray him, what he plays. And now there are rumors, spoiler alerts, about what he would be playing, which I don't know how cool I am with that. But nonetheless, it would be fun to see him show up and have a part in Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun. He seems to be a pretty good actor. I've seen him in a few things. I haven't seen a ton of his work, but there's a few movies that I've seen him in with, like Simon Pegg, that, you know, he's definitely a funny guy. So probably gives us a bit of an idea of what type of part he'd be playing. Probably more of a comedic role. But yeah, I think it would be good casting, and he's popular. He's one of those big names, you know, that if you put him into the Christmas special, he will draw a larger audience for sure, because he's a bit of a movie star.
Definitely. And this, it brings up something that I read probably a week or two ago now about how Stephen Moffat, I don't know if it's on record or if it was just kind of in a passing conversation, has come out and said that he wants to compete. He wants Doctor Who to compete with some of the big paid network HBO TV shows out there when it comes to popularity, when it comes to ratings, when it comes to watchability, big names, what have you. He wants to compete. It definitely feels like they're kind of doing that a little bit more here and there with the names that they're pulling into it. We had Tom Riley last week, who big name from an HBO show. And then with the rumor of Nick Frost showing up there, which he's been in some pretty, pretty good sized movies. They're definitely cult classics with Simon Pegg. I wonder if we're going to start seeing more and more names like this pop up. And it brings us back to wanting to see everybody's favorite director and Peter Jackson take the helm of the show for an episode.
And I think when we had Bonnie Burton on as a guest, I think she actually brought up the hope that Nick Frost would be in Doctor Who at some point. So if this turns out to be correct, then Bonnie will be happy.
All about making Bonnie Burton happy.
Yep, that's all that matters.
Now all we need is Cumberbatch.
So, Time Heist, that's the next episode coming up after Listen, which is the one that we're reviewing. But let's talk a little bit about what they've shown us so far, maybe speculate, see how wrong we can be.
I love that. Definitely up for seeing how wrong I can be on this one. So far, I think I'm striking out on pretty much all my predictions for this season. So
I think you got
why not go again?
I think you nailed the Danny Pink is the little kid that was in the trailer. I think you nailed that one.
They kind of like, that was a softball though. They kind of tossed that one up there for us.
Yeah, but you got it. We'll count it.
But I'll take it.
We have a bit of a quick little synopsis here, so I'll read that.
Go for it.
With the help of a beautiful shapeshifter and a cyber-augmented gamer, the Doctor and Clara must fight their way past deadly security and come face-to-face with the fearsome Teller, a creature of terrifying power that can detect guilt. So there you go. I was looking at the pictures earlier today before I saw this synopsis, and I was like, what are these characters, and who's that guy with like these cyber implants on his head? But now I guess we know based on this, he is a cyber augmented gamer. Interesting.
He definitely looks cooler than what his description is. I got to say that.
Yeah. I wonder how that's going to all play out. Like, how do they meet up with this guy? Why? I guess they're trying to break into the bank of Karabraxos. I don't know if I got that right.
But I think you were pretty darn close.
So I think maybe they need his help to kind of hack into some computer system.
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea. I'm looking forward to seeing how this all comes together. I've seen leading up to this week, there were a few synopses that came out as far as what this episode is going to be about. And there was a lot of discussion about what would drive the Doctor to become a bank robber. Why are him and Clara going to be going this route? Some things that led up to it was, well, maybe Clara's held hostage and the Doctor just kind of has to do this. But kind of looking through the pictures that are coming out, I don't think Clara's in any type of danger. I wonder if this is just like a fun, let's do this type of raid. I doubt it, just considering who the Doctor is. But yeah, I don't know. Some of these characters, some of the images that we're seeing, it looks pretty awesome quality wise. Do you get the same feeling from seeing the cyber augmented gamer and then the weird alien creature that we've seen? How do you feel about the quality of this episode that's coming up?
I think so far the quality of everything they've done has been really top notch. I'm a little nervous about this story. Seems a little, I don't know, just not that interesting to me in these characters that they've shown us so far. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it. We'll see. It's a bank heist. The Doctor, for whatever reason, is trying to break into a bank. I guess we'll figure that out. I'm sure there's a good reason. I guess I'm guessing it's not like they're trying to steal money, but it's probably some item or something that's in there that a bad person has taken and they're trying to get back. But yeah, I don't know. This one is probably the least excited I am for an episode based on the trailer, but I've been surprised before. Thinking something's going to be bad based on a trailer.
I did see that you mentioned that, I'll leave it to you, that once again the Doctor has on a different shirt.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of his thing. With Tennant, you know, he always had the same suit or switched between the two suits. Maybe he'd mix up his tie from here to there. I think his shoes changed a couple times. Mostly the same outfit. Smith, his bow tie color would change, his shirt color would change, and then toward the end, he got a completely new outfit. But, Capaldi, it seems like, you know, he's got the standard outfit, but his shirt seems to change almost every episode. We've seen white, we've seen black. I think in Listen, he had some kind of, like, weird sparkly shirt.
Yeah, yep.
Which I was like, what's that about? But, yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that one, but, yeah, it seems to be kind of his thing. He's got his standard outfit, but the shirt is going to change, I bet, quite a bit.
So looking through the images for this episode, we have quite a few through there. We know who the cyber gamer is going to be. The synopsis mentions the help of a beautiful shapeshifter, which I think I know who they're calling the beautiful shapeshifter. We posted the images on our Facebook page, or at least the link to find the images. So if you are following along at home, feel free to reference those. I'm trying to figure out who the fearsome Teller is going to be, because we have a few characters or two characters. We have the weird alien guy, And then we have, I believe her name is it Kaylee or Keely? She was a big name that everybody was pretty excited about coming on board with Doctor Who during the off season. We post an image of her really early on in the off season. She's the one with the glasses that she's kind of like pushing it off, bright red fingernails and all that jazz. I'm wondering if she might be the fearsome teller and they're trying to misdirect us with the alien. What are your thoughts there?
Keely Halls?
Yes, Keely Halls.
Okay, so I think it's a little bit more obvious than maybe than you noticed, but the alien seems to be some sort of a prisoner based on the images they've shown of him so far. He's got some kind of, you know, I don't know, straight jacket type thing, or he's definitely...
Or is he just so fearsome that they have to keep him chained up?
Maybe, but I'm thinking that she is the teller and the alien is some sort of a prisoner. But yeah, you're right. They might be trying to misdirect us. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know anything about Keely Hawes. Apparently people were excited, but I'm not familiar with her work. But she definitely looks like an interesting character. I like her look with the glasses and the smart outfit.
I like you. You said smart outfit. That was very British of you.
This is two episodes in a row. I'm commenting on fashion. I don't know.
We've done that more than just two episodes. It's kind of become expected. And since we're going down that road, the augmented cyber gamer, I like his get up as well. The leather jacket that zips on the side and the turtleneck with the zipper.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what all the zippers are for. He seems to have like to zip up the jacket, there's actually two different zippers. So I guess maybe he gets to decide how tight he wants it.
I guess. Hey, you never know. Maybe he has. Yeah, I have no idea. But he's got cyber implants. Maybe you have to be very careful about how tight you keep your jacket.
Yeah, but yeah, so that one's coming up Saturday. So it'll be interesting to see. Are you gonna watch it live or are you gonna do it on demand?
I have my season pass on iTunes, so I won't be watching it Saturday. I'll definitely be watching it Sunday though. This will be the first episode in 2 weeks that I can snag as quickly as possible after the showing. So I'm gonna try to get a couple watches in before it comes time to record our episode on this episode.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the episode that we watched on Saturday, Listen, which we were kind of speculating, you know, maybe it's a Stephen Moffat episode. The title is, you know, kind of creepy. The trailers were creepy. We're thinking maybe this was kind of the next Blink. After watching it, did you feel like it lived up to that expectation?
Oh, it had its moments. It had its moments. I watched the trailer again prior to watching the episode. In fact, I watched it with my wife, and her reaction to the trailer, as far as just, I mean, she literally said, "This is going to freak me out. This is going to freak me out." And I was like, yes, this is exactly what I expected it to be. This is going to be a great episode. And there were moments where I thought, this is creepy. I like this. I see what Moffat's doing. And then all of a sudden I'd be pulled out of the story. I don't know if it necessarily lived up to my expectations. I had really, really high expectations after watching the trailer and coming off of three amazing episodes. It was still a solid episode though. But we'll talk more about that as we move on. Just initial gut check. What are your thoughts?
I loved the episode. And there's reasons why, and we'll get into it, but I was not disappointed at all. I actually thought that maybe I had my hopes up too high for it and I would be disappointed. And that does happen to me sometimes with Doctor Who, but with this episode, and we can kind of get into the details, but the first time I watched it, I was like, what? Like, I'm not even sure what certain things meant or what happened. I was distracted. There was things going on. I watched it a second time and really focused on the storyline and listened to everything. And I just loved it. I loved how it got all timey-wimey and creepy all at the same time and had a kind of a twist type of ending. But, you know, all the elements that I like about Doctor Who were included in this episode.
Okay, so
get too far into it, though, we have to at least say this is Series 8, Episode 4, writer Stephen Moffat, director Douglas MacKinnon. All right, so we got that out of the way. But, what were you going to say?
I was going to say this is the first episode that I feel like we've swapped positions on. You are potentially getting all fanboy on me. And I'm kind of taking the step back and being a little bit more reserved. So I'm excited to hear kind of your thoughts on this. Just if, I mean, you have great potential of convincing me to be more excited about this episode. So I'm game. Let's do this.
All right. So we kind of get the very opening scene, which I will say was my least favorite part of the episode, was basically the Doctor sitting on top of the TARDIS. And he's kind of like in some kind of a, you know, meditation pose. And then he just looks up and says, "Listen." And yeah, I was just like, okay, that was weird. What did you think about kind of that opening scene? Did that work for you, or was that a little, maybe a little cheesy?
I saw it in the trailer. One of the original trailers that showed up, where we essentially saw the exact same thing. I'm still trying to place how that fit into the episode, because he says it before anything, any of the other events play out, unless we just got really timey-wimey there and they swapped things out on me. I'm not too concerned with him sitting on top of the TARDIS doing the whole Zen approach to things. I didn't mind that at all. I mean, we've already seen Amy floating outside of the TARDIS, holding on to Smith's hand and other things like that. So it wasn't too much of a stretch for me. I didn't mind it. It didn't rock my world, but it also wasn't too like impressive to me either. It was just like, okay, that's an interesting opening.
So you brought up the fact that this whole chalkboard thing that's been going through the different episodes, and I hadn't really picked up on it being a theme, but this starts out right away. You know, he's writing with chalk, and it was the first thing I was like, oh yeah, Adam was talking about this, and this seems to be a pretty big part of this episode. Were you happy to see that come back?
Yeah, and there's a couple other things that came back as well. So the first two episodes, we had him doing very much of a question-answer format, where he would ask a question and he would either answer himself or he'd wait for someone else to answer. He has a very, and I think this is very much of his character, of who he is as this doctor, very much of a teacher/professor approach. Like, he actually has his PhD in something and he's trying to instruct people. So seeing him write on a blackboard, I think, just emphasizes that aspect of his character. He's sketching things out. He's working through things. He has formulas. He has thoughts. He has patterns. He has paradigms. He's building something for himself. I love watching him write on a chalkboard. It might be because I'm like a huge fan of dry erase boards and writing for myself on a dry erase board, and seeing him use a chalkboard, I love it. I thought it was especially awesome with how he's sketching out different character traits of the perfect predator, the perfect defender, and then we get kind of the main thrust of this episode.
Yeah, the chalkboard's a great addition to the TARDIS. I think it's probably been there all along, but we just never saw it. Maybe he stole it from the Coal Hill Elementary School when he was the first doctor. But
yes. He stole he also has bookshelves, which I don't know if you've picked up on that, but he has bookshelves along the upper wall of the TARDIS. I really like kind of this older, more, I don't know, it has an older, sophisticated type of feel to it, as opposed to just a young fly-by-the-handlebars doctor.
So the doctor, one of the interesting parts of this intro is the doctor is talking about why people talk to themselves while he's talking to himself, and which I thought was great. You know, it's
kind of very
this,
meta.
Yeah, it's this meta thing, but he's, you know, he's going at length about why he has this theory and why people talk to themselves. Are they really alone? And he's very obsessed with this idea. And I loved it. I was eating it up. I liked all the dialogue that he had there. And then the part where he looks and the chalk has been moved, right?
Yeah.
And then he looks up the board and then it says, "Listen." And I think everything that he had written is gone now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so it's kind of this, you know, creepy element, like, oh, wait, what happened there? And maybe the doctor isn't alone. And, you know, I loved it.
Yeah, I really appreciated the time that they spent kind of building the case for why this episode was supposed to be creepy. Even like him jumping from the African Sahara, where he finds the perfect predator jumping on another animal and eating it, or the perfect defender and sees the blowfish, those aspects of it And then coming across the perfect hider who you're never alone. There's always someone there. They're the perfect hider. And I mean, with someone having that ability or something having that ability, you would never know they're there, which is kind of the point of that ability. And then to have the chalk just disappear and then for him to look and see Listen scrawled on the chalkboard, it definitely felt, it felt like they were doing a great job of establishing the freaky nature of this episode. They built a very good case.
So one of the things we get in this episode is the return of Danny Pink. We didn't have to wait too long.
Danny Pink is back.
But we get a lot more Danny Pink in this episode than we got before.
We did.
And we get the whole date with Clara, and kind of an odd date because it keeps, you know, jumping around a little bit, and you know, that they say something and then they show his reaction and then her reaction, and it's kind of weird. Like the first time I watched through, I was kind of confused about what they were trying to say was going on. Almost like maybe it was things that did happen or didn't happen. Or things were jumping around, like, you know, like almost like maybe they said it, but maybe they didn't. And I was really kind of confused.
A Donna Noble episode where she never, what happens if she never met the doctor?
Right. Like maybe it was something where he says this, or maybe he thought he said it. I don't know. There, it was just the way they were filming it and it kept cutting.
Yeah.
It seemed like they were trying to imply there was more than just a linear thing going on there. But then the second time I watched through it, I was like, no, it's just a, they just chose to kind of be a little bit creative with the way they filmed it.
Yeah. And I get what you're saying. Cause initially we see like Clara already back in her room, like leaning up against the door, and then they cut back to the restaurant. So they definitely did similar to how they had with Danny Pink's first episode, where it's like him recounting the conversation, but yet the conversation was moving linearly. He was just back in his room, pounding his head on the desk, remembering it. So they started that way with Clara. But then, yeah, you're right. They did a lot of creative cut out, cut back in, cut out, cut back in, skip huge portions of the conversation just so that we can get to the meat of what was going on. How do you feel about Danny Pink's character kind of portrayed in the restaurant? Did that at all change your opinion of Danny Pink?
So far, I don't know how much I like him. He's different than I thought he would be. He's very insecure, it seems like. And I don't know, I was expecting something a little bit different from the character. And I think we had kind of talked about this a couple episodes ago about my first impressions of him. But yeah, I mean, he's just not what I was expecting. And not that I don't like him as a character, but I don't like him as much as I thought I was going to. I want to see him grow and become a little bit stronger of a character and not be so nervous around Clara. And like, she's definitely the one that's taking charge in the interactions that they have.
Yeah, I agree. The episode that we recorded where we first talked about Danny Pink with Teresa, I was pretty excited to have Danny around. He had his different aspects where, yeah, he was nervous. He was a little insecure. He wasn't comfortable, however you want to say it. But he still seemed like he had the potential of being a very strong character. Whatever thoughts I had of him being that strong character who had the ability to take control, this episode lost it for me. I feel like he is just a broken, very insecure, lost puppy type character that Clara's in charge. He has aspects of that Matt Smith who's lost and he needs help.
Yeah. We'll see. His character might change, but yeah, it sounds like we're kind of on the same page with this guy. We're still waiting to see if he becomes something more interesting. Clara was kind of mean to him, you know, the way that she said, you know, the one thing that she said, kind of implying that when he says something about killing someone, he actually might mean it.
That means something coming from you.
Yeah, I was like whoa. Like, this is a, you know, he was in the military. I think she knows that. It seems like she's probably aware of some of the things that have happened with his past. And I feel like that should be off limits. Like, that's not even funny in any way. So, yeah. I was a little surprised. Like, wow. Like, I can't believe she went there.
I completely agree.
And then
That
the water comment. Do you want water? Oh, he'll dig a well or something like that. I was like,
I
whoa.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have no idea in what conversation that would be acceptable. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, seriously, I don't know if they're trying to tell us something about who Clara is by just having her say that she's kind of messed up herself, which she outright says that. Or if that was just like a really easy way to create drama and they decided to take that route with it. I don't know, but that's like two times in a row where she's made some comment about Danny being a killer, and I have no idea why she feels like she needs to go there. That's just off limits. I don't care who you are.
Oh yeah, but I love how the doctor with Clara, I kind of like this new dynamic. Whereas with Amy and even with Clara with Matt Smith, they were like this constant companion that were always with him. But it seems like with this relationship, the doctor just comes and picks her up whenever he wants her, but not necessarily needing her all the time. So who knows? He's going off and having these other adventures, I bet, all by himself. He probably likes to do things on his own, maybe not have that carer or conscience with him. But occasionally he needs that human element with him and he goes and picks her up.
Yeah, he pops in this episode and he's like, I need you for a thing. And like he says a couple other things about her mirror and why does she need three of them? Why can't she just turn her head? And she asks him, how long have you traveled alone? Which kind of implies that he does this a lot and he probably is starting to spend a lot of time by himself, which is completely different than past doctors who just seemed like they always needed someone with them because they can't travel alone. And he makes the comment that kind of feeds into the episode, I might not have ever been alone or something along those lines. But yeah, I do like that dynamic of he just kind of pops in, he pops out. We don't know how long Clara goes without seeing him, but he definitely feels like he's striking out on his own a little bit more.
Yeah. He's definitely like a rogue doctor. He's different. He's
And I love
different
that.
than any doctor we've seen. I mean, I haven't seen all of the classic stuff, so I don't know. Maybe he's similar to a classic doctor that I'm not aware of, but at least with the modern doctors, this is a whole new breed of Time Lord. But the doctor is obsessed with this, this idea that there's this silent alien or some sort of entity that is always with people, that is hiding. And so he's trying to figure it out. So he thinks that everybody has this, dream, and there's that connection. So he wants to find out Clara's, when is the point where she had that dream? And so he connects her into this telepathic, circuit in the TARDIS, which is kind of nasty, right? Like it's like this, it looks almost like this gooey stuff that she's putting her hands into.
Yeah, it's like a brain.
Yeah, and so that's new. I don't remember that before, unless I'm missing something. Yeah, so it basically he's letting her control where the TARDIS goes by tapping into her brain, it seems
Her
like.
time stream.
Right. So, but I think what ends up happening is because she just got off the date with Danny, she ends up not thinking about her own past, but thinking about Danny, which I think is why it took her to this home. Or is there more to it than that? Is it because she's actually related to the future guy because her and Danny have kids? I don't know.
So where I thought that was going is it's going anywhere on her timeline for anybody that could be potentially a part of her timeline. And because she got distracted by someone who's a part of her timeline, she ended up traveling his stream, if that makes any sense. At least that's the way I understood it. So
Right.
because she got distracted by Danny and Danny's a part of her current timeline, then she ended up going in the past and finding Rupert.
Rupert, yes, which she I like how she's at his window or she's standing below his window. He's talking to her and she if you can tell right away she looks up and sees this boy and thinks, "Oh no, is this Danny?" And so she asks him his name and he says Rupert. And so she has this sudden look of like, "Oh, relief." And then he's like, "Rupert's a stupid name. I'm gonna change it." And then she's like, "Oh crap, it is Danny." Which yeah, so that was kind of funny. She goes up, into his room. And then we have the whole scene with them going under the bed, and then the creepiness starts.
Yes.
They're under the bed, somebody sits on the bed, they think they're alone, and then that, they come out from under the bed, and there's somebody on the bed with like this red blanket on top of them.
And this right here is the climax of the creepiness. Like this, I was prepared for the rest of the episode to be based in this children's home with whatever this is on the bed being there, because the entire thing leading up to it was her asking, did you have this dream? Rupert, Danny saying, yes, I had this dream. And then she's doing the whole elementary school teacher thing of trying to comfort. Do you know what's under your bed? I'm under your bed. And she crawls under there. And then Danny crawls under there with her. And it's like, and all of a sudden you hear the springs go down on the bed, which uber creepy. But like at that point in time, I'm trying to convince myself it's the doctor on the bed. That's the doctor on the bed. And then they crawl out from underneath the bed and they show whatever that is on the bed with a blanket. And all of a sudden the doctor's in a chair. And it's like, okay, this just got really good. This scene didn't last as long as I wanted it to last, though.
And the doctor is completely like not even worried about this thing that's sitting on the bed, which it made me almost think that they were seeing things, because when they turned and saw the doctor and the doctor was completely unconcerned, I was like, oh, when they turn back around, that thing is going to be gone. But it wasn't. And then they go through the whole thing where the doctor's, you know, telling Danny not to look and all this stuff, and it ends up.
How did you like the dialogue of fear? How did you like, let me pull back a little bit more. How did you like the doctor's interaction with young Danny? Because I thought that was an interesting dynamic based on what we know of this doctor, his talking to a child. How did you like that interaction?
I mean, it didn't really stick out to me as being, I guess he wasn't as kind, maybe, as previous doctors have been to children, kind of more matter of fact. But it didn't really stick out to me to take much notice.
I was surprised because, yeah, he wasn't as kind as he was to, or as previous doctors. That said, he like transitioned from, it felt very much like he transitioned to a gruff grandfather role, where he was just his mannerisms, how he was looking at Danny, the motions of his arms, what he even explained as far as like fear and adrenaline and your heart pumping and you can run faster, you can fight harder, you can, it felt very much like a grandfather, which is not at all what I was expecting, considering how just gruff and short and give me your coat and I'm cold and no sense of both of us being cold of a doctor. This was, I thought that was a really interesting dynamic. I know that we have some potential episodes coming up where he's interacting more with children. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there, but anyways, continue with what happens in this scene.
And so, yeah, this is one of the parts where I was a little confused, you know, as to what we were supposed to believe this thing was, because basically the options are, you know, it's something scary or it's just a friend playing a trick on you.
And I love that Clara even says those options.
And I'm thinking, if you think that it might be his friend playing a trick on him, turn around and grab the blanket off of him, you know, just solve the mystery. Like, what, I guess maybe they thought it would be some sort of a dangerous thing, but I mean, it's already right there with you. So what's the harm in taking the blanket off and at least taking a peek and seeing maybe if it was just a kid?
Because it's a thing that never wants to be seen. So the question is, what happens if it is seen? What lengths will it go to so that no one has ever seen it before? It was something that, it was a tension I wanted to have resolved. Even now, I really wish they would have just let us know one way or the other, because we get to the end of the episode and we still don't know. And there's so much uncertainty throughout the entire episode. And even thinking back to the chalkboard and listen on a chalkboard, Clara even says, you might have forgotten that you wrote it. And the doctor's like, I can't forget that I wrote it. And she's like, do you remember who you are? Or something along those lines, implying that, yeah, the doctor could actually do something that he doesn't remember he did. And then we have this on the bed where we have no idea. Is it really one of the freakiest things that we've ever seen in Doctor Who? Or is it just another kid on a bed who's playing a trick on Rupert?
Right. And we do get like a quick scene where the blanket comes off. Did you catch that?
I saw like it was it like a creamish colored who knows what underneath the blanket?
Yeah, it was. It was kind of a weird. It did look like it was something weird,
Yeah.
but it was so fast, and they definitely didn't dwell on it. And then the thing disappeared. So, it kind of implied that there was some sort of a creature, under there. But then I think later on that kind of gets dispelled. But I think there was, yeah, it was kind of just, it was just this weird thing.
Oh man, I just had an epiphany.
What's that?
So, theory time. So this entire time we're waiting for paradise where dead people are, the netherworld. What happens if this was a kind of like a look into this other dimension where they're not really alone, they're always with you, you can't see them, and every once in a while they cross over. What if this comes up at the end? Because they've made such a big deal about this and they left so much of it unresolved. I have a hard time thinking that we're just not going to ever touch this episode again. What happens if it plays into the whole like Keeper of the Netherworld that we're getting in episodes 11 and 12 with where all the other dead people have ended up in paradise?
I'll be disappointed because I feel like the episode was very much resolved and that there wasn't any loose ends. So I feel like if they come back and try to tie this back in and say the way they explained it at the end of this episode isn't actually what was going on, I would be disappointed.
Okay,
But
let's move on.
we can talk a little bit more, I guess, as we get toward the end here about maybe what our theories are on what all this means. But kind of jumping ahead, they end up at the end of time. They meet Danny Pink's relative, or we believe Danny Pink's relative,
Orson.
Orson Pink, which I actually thought, did you think his name was something different?
No, I didn't. I
Okay,
just thought
because
Orson is a funny name.
I thought his name was Awesome Pink because of the way, I don't know, the first time I watched it, it just sounded like he said awesome. And I remembered that the boy said he hated his name and that he was going to change his name. And so then I thought that he changed his name to Awesome. And then obviously that didn't make sense because the boy was Danny and this is not Danny. But yeah, I was actually very lost the first time I watched this episode.
Nice.
But yeah, for the entire first time I watched this, I thought his name was Awesome Pink.
That kind of there was another article that came up that said, and I might have already mentioned this, that everybody's saying that Doctor Who should be renamed Doctor What because no one understands what in the world Capaldi is saying half the times. That's one of those moments.
I can definitely agree with that. He's harder to understand, but I think I'm catching on a little bit to his accent and starting to be able to pick up more of what he's saying. But yeah, there's more than, at least two or three times every episode that I have no idea what he just said.
That's why I watch it with subtitles, my friend.
But yeah, so they meet Orson. He's a time traveler himself. They're at the end of time. And they have this whole scene in there and with and I'm kind of skipping some stuff here, but more for time's sake, and we can jump back if you want to on certain points. But they're in like is it kind of like a space station or something that's there at the end of time?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay. Yeah, so they're in some sort of space station
I'll
and
accept that answer.
yeah, okay. And yeah, so the doctor's in there with Clara. And there's this hatch that leads somewhere, and there's these noises. So it's kind of the same idea as what's going on in Danny's room when he was a kid. Now is happening to his relative Orson here, where he's alone at the end of time, but they believe there might be this other thing that's with him as well. Was that as creepy for you when they're in the ship and you have kind of the noises outside of the space station there? Or did that work as well for you as the bedroom scene?
It didn't, just to be honest. There's something creepy about underneath the bed, and there's something creepy about kind of the lead up to that with the hand coming out and grabbing the back of your foot. It's a little less creepy when you get a space station and there's something locked outside. I mean, there's some great creepy movies based off that idea alone. But I think the creepiest movies are based off of what's underneath your bed, something a little bit more tangible. I still thought it was a fun scene, especially when there's all the discussion. The doctor says that they have to stay one more night so the TARDIS can recharge. And you can see the look of fear on Orson's face. And the doctor is like trying to draw that out of him. And then Orson's, don't make me stay one more night. And so they lock him in the TARDIS essentially. And then the blue light comes on and you see what's scrawled above the door. Did it say don't open or don't unlock the door? So yeah. It definitely had its creepy elements to it, but I don't think it was as creepy as the bedroom scene.
Okay, so
agree?
I agree. The doctor seemed to be convinced. You know, he throughout the entire episode, he was convinced there's something more going on here. There's a scene where he's basically like, there's all these noises outside the door, and there's always an alternate explanation. You know, with the bedroom scene, it was, oh, it could be a friend that's just playing a prank on you, or it could be something evil. In the space station, it was kind of the same idea. It could be something scary outside that door, or it could just be the capsule settling, or I think was his explanation.
Yeah.
So there's always this alternate explanation whenever there's these scary moments. I'm trying to remember exactly what they ended up doing in this situation. They didn't actually open the door, right?
No, the doctor did. Okay. But
there was some kind of pressure, something happened in there and everybody's flying around.
Yeah. So there's the scene where the doctor basically tells Clara to go inside the TARDIS, and Clara fights back, and the doctor says, go inside the TARDIS, and Clara says, I won't ever leave you in danger. And the doctor basically says, then stop traveling with me. And he says, do what you're told and get inside the TARDIS. So Clara gets inside the TARDIS and the doctor unlocks the door. But as soon as the doctor unlocks the door, it starts opening. So then there's the whole thoughts of, is something really opening the door, or is the pressure just releasing? But there's an air bubble outside, so everything should be fine. And then the door opens, the screen inside the TARDIS freaks out, so Clara can't really see what's happening. The air bubble bursts, and so all the pressure of the air escaping, high pressure to low pressure, all that wonderful scientific stuff, and everything starts flying out of the capsule into nothingness that is the end of the world.
Right. But I kind of want to jump to what ends up happening at the end, because I think that's kind of the big, you know, catalyst to this whole thing.
Bring it.
So we have the they end up taking the TARDIS somewhere else, and I'm trying to remember how it all went down. I don't remember exactly, but I guess Clara,
doctor was knocked out. Clara taps back into the telepathic circuit.
Yeah, so she knows that that's her way of like flying the TARDIS. So she puts her fingers in there. It takes her somewhere else. They land. Clara basically decides that she's going to go in there. The doctor's knocked out. She doesn't want Danny, or she doesn't want Awesome to go with her because she thinks that it's somewhere in his time stream possibly, and she doesn't want him to see himself, type of thing. So she goes in by herself, or she leaves the TARDIS by herself and ends up kind of in this barn type thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. And this is where it starts to get really interesting, because you hear people talking. They're talking about this child and, you know, why does he sleep in the barn, and why is he crying all the time? And then you hear him say, you know, he's never going to be a Time Lord.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, what? Which I think, you know, this is where it started to get really cool, because you start to realize that, you know, whoever this child is on the bed, it's not Danny. It's not a relative of Danny. It's actually a Time Lord.
I'm still processing this. Keep going.
So it's a Time Lord. And of course, when you think, you know, Time Lord, you think, is this the Doctor? And, you know, I think that's kind of where they were going with it. But Claire is there. She ends up, you know, the Doctor or whoever, you know, the Doctor child stands up. She grabs his ankle. And so she kind of becomes that nightmare, you know, real timey-wimey stuff. You know, it was kind of blowing my mind a little bit. I'm like, whoa, this is the Doctor, and they're in this barn, and, you know, assuming that they're on Gallifrey, which, you know, we we've always had talked about as this season was coming.
Yeah.
You know, when is the Doctor going to return to Gallifrey? When is he going to find Gallifrey? Well, this is not the way we expected it to happen, but, you know, they went, you know, they've already been to Gallifrey and it's only four episodes in. Yeah. I mean, this is, I'm kind of just like rambling here just because I think I was so excited about some of the things that happened. You know, did you have any thoughts on kind of how this all went down at the end?
No. And yes, all at the same time. So like watching the episode, I took it at face value. Child, Time Lord, scared of everything. Must be the Doctor. Claire's under the bed, grabs the ankle. This is what spurs the thoughts that the Doctor had early on in the episode. Really timey-wimey stuff. We even get a 50th anniversary flashback of the War Doctor walking to what we're led to believe is the same barn. We have the passing on of Dan the Soldier Man to the Doctor, or to the little kid in the bed. We have the stars in the little kid's eyes. We have all that stuff. I thought it was a really neat scene, but now hearing you describe it and not saying the Doctor, but just referring it to the child as a Time Lord has my mind like going crazy right now.
Okay, so let's talk about it then.
Yeah.
Did you think that this episode had a clear answer to what was going on? Or
no.
Do you think they were leaving some things up to our imaginations? And you just said no. I think there is a clear answer, and I think they made it very obvious. So I'd like to hear kind of what your interpretation of this, you know, this specific scene was, and what were we supposed to believe? Not only who this kid is, but kind of what is the resolution to, you know, is there some kind of person that's with us at all times, or was it just all in the Doctor's head?
Oh man, I have no idea now. I thought I knew going into this recording that I knew exactly what the episode was about. But the fact that you just asked me this question, I am really starting to be confused. Okay, so overall, I didn't think we got a resolution to this episode. I think that they gave us quite a few tidbits, enough to make us feel good about what we watched, enough to do a little bit of fan service, enough to get people to think about other aspects. But now looking back on it, I'm starting to wonder if it was just one giant misdirect. I might be like going crazy on theories, and I might need to watch this episode again. But we never know for sure if that child in the barn was the Doctor, right? We never know that.
I think that they definitely,
they want you to believe it's the Doctor.
It's the Doctor. And this is why I say it's the Doctor.
Go for it.
Because Clara, she realizes it's the Doctor. She gets up there and she talks to him, comforts him, kind of gives him the whole speech about fear and using it the right way. What was it that she said?
Fear is the makes companions of us all.
Fear does not have to make you cruel or cowardly, but it can make you kind instead. Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact quote, but yeah, she's basically comforting him. He's scared. She's telling him everything's okay, not to be afraid. And as she's giving him this speech, they have the, you had kind of mentioned it before, they kind of flash to the scene of the War Doctor going back to the barn.
Yeah.
The same barn, I believe, to do the whole thing with the moment. So
yep.
I don't think they would have shown that if this wasn't the Doctor. I don't think they would have had Clara say these things to him and it'd be such a big deal if it was just some random Time Lord child.
Okay.
So in my mind, this was definitely the Doctor, and I love the fact that we got the, you know, kind of the nod to the 50th, that he, you know, he had this time of trouble and he went back to this place that he remembered. So yeah, I think it's definitely the Doctor. I also think that there is resolution to the whole storyline as far as the, you know, the dream that the Doctor had. I think this is what kicked it off, you know. He has been thinking about it probably his whole life, and he's been scared his whole life, and so he's trying to figure out why. And the explanation is there wasn't anything in Danny's room There wasn't, anything scary under that blanket. There wasn't anything outside that door of the shuttle pod. It was just the doctor the whole time just imagining these things because of this moment that happened to him when he was a child.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Yeah, so I thought it was pretty clear, and it did take me 2 watchings to kind of wrap my head around everything. But once I did watch it the second time, I thought it was pretty clear that it was just the doctor's head playing games with him, which was awesome. I loved that. That there was no villain, there was no creature, there was no, any type of scary monster. It was just the doctor.
You've brought me back down to earth. I'll take it. How you describe it, it makes perfect sense. I just really wanted there to be something really freaky. I wanted there to be something scary underneath that blanket. I wanted there to be something under Danny's bed. I wanted there to be something outside that spaceship. I wanted there to be something that stole the chalk and wrote on the board. I wanted something to be there that turned off the TV for the boys or for the children's home night manager. But like you said, at the end where Claire does the speech, it plays right into the speech that the doctor gives Rupert/Danny, which is perfect. It plays into the war doctor and the moment, like you mentioned, which is perfect. And then there's even a little Easter egg, which, not taking credit for pulling this out whatsoever, but just what I've read, where the quote from where fear makes companions of us all, that's actually from An Unearthly Child, word for word, that is quoted from that episode. So
Unearthly Child being the very first episode of Doctor Who.
Being the very first episode of Doctor Who. So it would make perfect sense that that's the Doctor. My uncertainty of everything else, I think, just had me a little bit uncertain of that part. But I can accept it. It makes perfect sense, logical sense. And then we have Claire going back in the TARDIS, telling the Doctor to never look back, never look at where they've been, and then hugging the Doctor, and he's still not sure of this hugging thing.
Yeah, I liked it. I wasn't disappointed. I thought that it was a great way to tell a story and show us just a little bit more about how this Doctor is so crazy, that he will go literally to the end of time to try to prove a theory that he has that is completely wrong, that he's just inside his own head. And I think that I thought it was good storytelling. I really enjoyed it. But did we miss anything that you wanted to talk about before we kind of wrap this episode up?
Claire goes back to Danny, and do the whole, like, I've been so nervous. I've been so nervous. What are you nervous about? I'll show you. And then they make out on the couch. That was how the episode ended. So there's definitely a relationship there. There's also Dan the Soldier Man that Clara hits, the soldier without a gun that showed up in preview. Clara gives it to Rupert. Orson gives it back to Clara, saying time travel is in his family. And then all sorts of, like, stories that were passed down. He gives Clara Dan the Soldier Man. Clara gives Dan the Soldier Man to the young doctor in the bed. I'm still trying to figure out if Dan the Soldier Man is going to show back up at some point with the doctor and he's going to have it magically in his pocket. I don't know. But I thought that was interesting that that soldier got passed down through everything and then made it back to the doctor. Yeah, other than that, I thought it was interesting that another episode has gone by where we don't have a Missy reference. So Missy did not show up in this episode. No one died in this episode, which was kind of unusual. No mention of Paradise and no Promised Land. So some major story elements that have kind of made their way into the past couple episodes completely absent from this episode. And this is an episode written by Stephen Moffat. So if they were going to show up, I was convinced that it was going to be this episode. But yep, no longer there.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad they're not having it in every single episode. I think it makes sense. It's kind of with certain things that happened with Matt Smith's era, with the whole crack in the wall, You know, it didn't every episode the crack didn't show up. It just kind of popped in here and there to kind of keep that in your mind. So I actually think it's good. It's a good way to do it if they kind of leave it out for a couple episodes and then all of a sudden maybe next episode we get another reference to it to remind us, oh yeah, there's that ongoing thread, but not hammering it over our heads and having it every single episode because then it just takes away from the effect of it.
So are we going to see it next episode?
I don't know. I can't really. Sure. Yeah, we're going to see something next episode.
I say the shapeshifter dies and then she goes to paradise.
They got to get a little bit more creative with it. They can't just have, you know, every time somebody dies, pops up in paradise. Hi, welcome to paradise. Like they got to get a little bit more creative with that. But yeah, maybe something will happen next episode. But I think I'm okay with it not showing up every episode. But yeah, so hey, great episode again, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Four episodes in, I think we're thumbs up on all four of them. The first one, maybe it was a little iffy.
I gave thumbs up to the first one. Introduction of the Doctor definitely carried it. Second one, yes, completely thumbs up. Third one, an unexpected thumbs up. This one, you convinced me that the story is definitely worth a thumbs up. I just really wanted something more. I wanted either no resolution so I could continue to be scared, or I wanted an awesome resolution that definitely confirms to be scared. And yet I was told not to, I was told to enjoy fear because fear is a good thing to have around.
It's a constant companion.
It's a constant companion.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio. As usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes. We've actually gotten a lot of great feedback, mostly on Twitter, from new listeners that are just finding us and really excited about the show. So we really appreciate you guys. And a lot of you are sharing, you know, retweeting our episodes, or just, you know, we're getting random tweets where people are like, hey, are you listening to Bad Wolf Podcast? You should be. So like, it's just kind of cool to see the audience start to grow and have people excited about what we're doing. And I just was mentioning Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, search for Bad Wolf Radio. We're the ones with the black and white logo. And you can send us feedback. Shoot us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And we will look at your email. And if you have something interesting to say, maybe we'll even read it on the show.
Stay tuned for Time Heist. Later days. And you know what? I want to say that the Time Lord in the bed is the master.
Interesting. And I, you know what? I'm going to go back on what I said, that it's definitely the Doctor, because that's such a good, that would be such a good twist that I would accept it.
I'm trying to figure out how she could give Capaldi back Dan the Soldier Man and him not have Dan the Soldier Man moving forward. I think that's the missing piece of the puzzle. The Master's going to show up with Dan the Soldier Man.
Yeah, I will. Like I said, that's, I like the theory. I think that would be a good twist. So I'm going to go back and say, I am now 99% sure that that's the Doctor. But there's this 1% chance that if it's the Master, I can get on board with that too, because that would be a great misdirect. The only thing I think that would hold that theory up is the whole scene where they show the War Doctor. That would be just almost too much of a cheat, you know, that they did that. That's too much of a misdirect. But yeah, that would be kind of interesting if they reveal that maybe Clara thought it was, she was talking to the Doctor, but she was actually talking to the Master.
There's just the entire episode is like assumptions. Everything is being assumed that I'm thinking it would be a perfect time for them to suck us into, we assumed it and then they blew us away at the end. I mean, yeah, they gave us some great misdirections that led us to believe it is, but I don't know. You got me wondering if it really is the Master. The fact that even
if it's really the Master, I was convinced it wasn't.
But the way that you were describing, like a Time Lord, we were never told it was the Doctor. No one ever said it was the Doctor. How would they have?
That's the thing. It's not like they could have said his name, because really we don't really know his name.
Yeah,
and he wasn't going by the doctor yet, so
they're really hedging the bets, though, with even Claire telling the doctor never look back, because if the doctor looked back, he could say, that wasn't me.
Yeah, right. I don't remember looking like that.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, bonus content over.
Boom.